Looking for more than just pain relief? At Ability Chiropractic, they help your body do what it was designed to do, heal naturally. Their doctors focus on spinal and nervous system alignment to restore balance, energy, and overall wellness. From infants to grandparents, families across Columbus are discovering that true healing starts from within, not from a prescription bottle. Experience what natural healing can do for you. Book your appointment today at abilitychiro.com.
My place in tech changes every day, but I don't fear the future because I'm with the leader, Pluralsight. Their online learning platform has the hands-on, expert-led courses I need to master new tech skills and create bigger impacts so I can learn quickly and stay ahead. With Pluralsight, I don't fear what's next. I embrace it. Tap in at Pluralsight.com and see for yourself.
Hey, I'm Steph.
I'm Alex.
And this is Not Today.
And we're live.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I have good news.
What's your good news?
The witch is dead.
Oh, ding dong.
Yes. I tried to sing. It's bad. It's okay.
Yeah. The first time we tried to record, we had a technical difficulty and it was Alex belting ding dong. The witch is dead.
No, so. Didn't work. It's okay. We'll move on. We did watch the movie for the first time. I think this was the first time I watched the original.
Ever? You said you'd seen it before.
I think I'd seen it before, but it was a remake.
Oh,
have
crazy.
They done a remake?
Yeah, there have been a lot of remakes.
Right. I was like, they have to have. I just don't remember this specific cast.
That's actually insane that you know? The original Wizard of Oz is something that you were like, oh, I don't know this cast. Because to me, I'm like, that's them. That's the ones.
Sure. Well, see a different one first, you're like, that's...
Sure.
That's it. You're like seven.
Yeah, there's a couple different ones. One of them, I think... At the end, they make Dorothy like a psych patient because she's like, no, I swear it's real. I was there. And they're like, okay, Dorothy. And they like put her away.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Fun. Yeah. We love a dark ending to a children's movie.
Right. Well, I don't know if that one's made for children, actually. But yeah, there have been many spinoffs and like things inspired by The Wizard of Oz. It has a very large reach. So yeah, I thought it'd be really interesting to talk about it today because Wicked is coming out so soon and the movie itself, The Wizard of Oz, was a shit show. And I don't know if anyone really knows about that or like how many people know about that, but multiple members of the cast like almost died because of how
almost
crazy
died?
It was. Yeah.
Why am I surprised? But you know, we're talking about it, but right. Like it just is not something you think about when you're making a movie.
Yeah, well, it was made in 1939, so it was kind of the Wild West of Hollywood a little bit. And yeah, they were doing some crazy shit.
They're out here doing some crazy shit. Okay. Well, it was also the first movie in color?
No.
Is that true?
No, it wasn't the first movie in color. It was like one of the first to use this technique called Technicolor. And yeah, it was like one of the first of its time to be in color. And then right after The Wizard of Oz, I believe it was like movies used it a lot more often. And like from there, it was kind of like, yeah, use color.
Right.
But before we jump in, I did want to mention that our merch shop has a little sale going on, a little Black Friday sale. From now until November 24th, our t-shirts will be just $16 and everything else is up to 35% off. So love to see it. Happy
it's a
Black
screaming
Friday.
Screaming deal.
Screaming deal. So anyway, the link for that is in our Instagram bio, and I'll put it in the description of this week's episode. So, boom.
Get your merch.
Get your merch. But okay, why don't we just jump right in? Because I feel like we're already itching to talk about it. So let's just follow the impulse.
Yeah, no, I just, how could this have possibly gotten dangerous? It just, the whole movie seems like they're on like a wild set, sure, but they're just kind of dancing around.
Yeah.
Throwing apples.
Correct. Yeah.
Oh, the fire.
Okay. Listen.
Yeah.
I'm going to talk about it. But that's literally the exact reason I wanted you to watch it last night, because I wanted you to like have it fresh in your brain and then I can just rip it, it open, and you wouldn't have any idea while you're watching it. You have no idea how many times last night I wanted to tell you what was happening and like why the scene was relevant, but I didn't. I didn't even say anything. So pat on the back to me. And let's talk about it now, because I'm dying to. The Wizard of Oz has remained a classic American film since it came out in 1939. The film star Judy Garland was launched into the stratosphere of Hollywood stardom, promising her a long and successful career as a Hollywood actress. The film is famous for its innovative technicolor and beautiful set pieces, and was truly ahead of its time. Before it was made, most Hollywood studios were trying to stay away from any story in the fantasy genre, since their view was that fantasy films only appealed to kids who paid a fraction of the admission costs that adults did, so the real money was in the stories that would appeal to an older audience. However, that was proved wrong by the making of Snow White. And once Snow White was made and they saw how big of a box office hit that was, they were like, all right, actually, we could mess with some children's stories. And thus, The Wizard of Oz was made. Yes, was born. Well, it had been around for a long time. But yeah, this version of The Wizard of Oz. The Hollywood MGM studio pulled out all the stops for this classic, spending around $3 million of that time's money, which is around $55 million by today's standards, because they were just desperate to match the commercial success of Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs. And it worked. The film won 2 Academy Awards for its music, Over the Rainbow won Best Original Song, and made Judy Garland famous. In addition to earning nominations for Best Picture, Best Cinematography, Art Direction, and Special Effects. Commercially speaking, it made decent money when it was released, but even more and more money after CBS aired it for the first time on November 3rd, 1956. So we're going to talk about this a little bit later, but like when it first came out, people weren't like harsh, but it wasn't like an absolute banger. Like it kind of flopped a little bit as far as like earnings went, and then it had a second life when it was aired on television in people's homes.
Interesting.
Yeah, but that's something we could talk about later. While this movie is revered as a cinematic masterpiece, it is also infamous for its disastrous production problems, possibly more than any other film in history. Despite its success, The Wizard of Oz is seen by some as cursed. To begin with, there were so many failed attempts at making the film that came before the one we knew. They went through 5 different directors on the actual making of The Wizard of Oz we know and love. There were multiple on-set disasters. They had lost footage. Production was halted many times. It just seemed like there were so many bad omens that the universe was like, hey, maybe stop. Yeah. But that did not happen. There were severe accidents on set that almost cost multiple cast members their lives, and some of the special effects seen in the film had never been done before, and because of that, numerous cast members would need to be hospitalized, there were horrific work conditions, and unprecedented production challenges requiring people to literally invent new processes. The most amazing thing about The Wizard of Oz is that it even made it to theaters in the first place.
Okay, this is a lot. So we went through 5 directors.
Yeah.
They had to like come up with new shit and they almost killed people.
Correct. So why don't we begin talking about Judy Garland?
Looking for more than just pain relief? At Ability Chiropractic, we help your body do what it was designed to do, heal naturally. Our doctors focus on spinal and nervous system alignment to restore balance, energy, and overall wellness. From infants to grandparents, families across Columbus are discovering that true health starts from within, not from a prescription bottle. Experience what natural healing can do for you. Book your appointment today at AbilityChiro.com. That's AbilityChiro.com.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Judy is actually named Frances Ethel Gumm and was born in Grand Rapids, Minnesota on June 10th, 1922. Garland was pushed to perform at a young age by her mother, Ethel, a frustrated vaudeville performer who put her daughters on the stage as early as possible. At the tender age of just 2.5, Garland was in the spotlight performing alongside her sisters in a song and dance trio known as the Gum Sisters, who appeared in a variety of movies. Eventually, she ended up changing her stage name to Judy Garland, and she was signed onto a contract with MGM Studios in 1935. Although she was immensely talented, she was always typecast as the quirky girl next door character, since she was never thought of as the glamorous type. Louis B. Mayer, who was, I believe, in charge of MGM at the time, would often refer to Judy Garland as his quote-unquote little hunchback.
What?
And others called her the ugly duckling behind her back. Even though she was also being praised at the time as one of MGM's most promising stars. Originally, the studio wanted Shirley Temple, who was one of the highest paid actresses in the industry at the time, to play Dorothy. They thought casting her would guarantee Oz's success, but a few producers believed that Judy Garland would be a better fit for the role, even though she was a little bit older, since she had better singing chops for the role. And ultimately, it was given to her. And when I say older, I mean she was like...
16?
Yeah, 15 or 16 instead of like 10. I feel like it would have been weird to have someone that young be Dorothy. But I guess I just think that because I'm so used to The Wizard of Oz as it is. Anyway, the treatment of Judy Garland on the set of The Wizard of Oz would no doubt result in a lawsuit if such things had taken place in the contemporary industry. She endured verbal and physical abuse, and it was just wild. Producers tormented Judy Garland over her weight before she even began filming for Oz. When she was 14, filming her first feature movie, MGM told her she looked like a fat little pig with pigtails on screen, and she was put on her first of many diets. Because her calories were so restricted, executives would go so far as to remove a plateful of food when she was about to eat it, and she was left permanently hungry. When it came to the filming of Oz, Garland was a 16-year-old who had to look as if she were 10. So I guess it would have been better in that right to be Shirley Temple because she actually was the age they were looking for. Louis B. Mayer had Judy Garland on a strict diet of quote-unquote black coffee, chicken soup, and 80 cigarettes a day.
What the fuck, guys? This is child abuse.
Yeah, it was.
To be clear, I'm outraged before that statement, but yeah. I just, you know.
No, I know. She was also sometimes given cottage cheese and quote-unquote pep pills to suppress her appetite, and then she was given barbiturates to make her fall asleep.
Where is her mother?
Okay, so they were allowed to do this because, one, it was 1939, so, you know, there were not many rules, and also her mother allowed it. In later life, Garland would remember her mother as, quote, the real Wicked Witch of the West. Garland's mother was the first to provide pills, both for energy and sleep, to her not yet 10-year-old daughter. So she was given, amphetamines and barbiturates and whatever. Like, she was given energy to have work ethic all day, and then she would have to be put to sleep, basically. It's very messed up. Garland wasn't alone in being forced to take drugs. Her co-star Mickey Rooney, who appeared in multiple films with her, was reportedly also forced to consume them. Both Garland and Rooney were stretched to the limit for the studio, and neither spoke of what they endured until years later. Garland said, quote, "They had us working days and nights on end. They'd give us pills to keep us on our feet long after we were exhausted. They'd take us to the studio hospital and knock us out with sleeping pills. Mickey sprawled out on one bed and me on another. Then after 4 hours, they'd wake us up and give us pep pills again so we could work 72 hours in a row. Half of the time we were hanging from the ceiling, but it was a way of life for us."
Wait, 72 hours in a row?
I don't know if that's actually how long she'd work in a row. That may have been an exaggeration, but also, I don't know. Because she was definitely working like minimum 12 to 16 hour days. So by the time she began filming for The Wizard of Oz, she was very used to this kind of horrendous treatment. Louis B. Mayer hired people to constantly watch over Judy Garland to make sure she was following her diet. If he ever found out that she ventured from what he wanted, like if he'd catch her sneaking in a milkshake, he'd give her the diet pills, like I said, to speed her up and reduce her appetite. So by the time she was 17 years old, Garland finished filming Oz, and she was already well addicted to barbiturates and amphetamines, and her substance abuse would become such an issue for the remainder of her life until she died of an accidental overdose in 1969 at the age of 47.
Oh my God.
It's awful. Judy Garland, like, as glamorous as her life seemed, like, to the viewer, she had a very tough life.
Yeah.
And the famous blue and white gingham dress was chosen to make her look younger, but she was forced to wear a tight corset underneath to hide her developed figure. Sidney Luft, Judy's ex-husband, wrote in his memoir that Garland, quote, unlike other actresses, could not successfully camouflage extra weight, especially because she was dancing and singing in revealing costumes. Just 4 feet 11.5 inches tall, she could be underweight and still appear heavy or out of proportion on screen. Which is insane to me, because she did not look big at all. Like,
yeah, I mean,
she's not a big person. She is a small person. But that's just a tale as old as time as far as Hollywood goes, so.
Yeah, that's really unfortunate. I'm sure she tortured herself over this.
How could she not?
Endlessly, yeah. I mean,
she was being tortured over it.
Yeah.
It's awful. As far as physical abuse went, director Victor Fleming also slapped Judy Garland on set for giggling. So that was also happening. And in the memoir, Judy and I, My Life with Judy Garland, Sidney Luft revealed that a lot of older men male munchkin actors were quote-unquote naughty. Apparently, they spent most of their time after work at bars and were disorderly as hell and yelling and screaming. And Luft recalled one event in particular claiming, quote, the next day on set, hungover, they would make Judy's life miserable by putting their hands under her dress. The men were 40 or more years old. And I have a little bit more about that later on, because the whole munchkin thing is another piece of this. But if that's true, that's disgusting.
Yeah.
Ali Jean Hermetz, in the making of Wizard of Oz, said, Judy Garland was like a leaf held under a magnifying glass by someone who wants to set a fire. While all of that was certainly a threat to Judy's mental and physical health, she was also exposed to an even greater threat while on set. The Wizard of Oz was made before CGI was a thing, so filmmakers had to get creative, to say the least. There's a scene in the movie where the gang is about to reach the Emerald City, but first they have to run through a field of poppies, and thanks to the Wicked Witch, it makes them fall asleep before they can get there. But Glinda the Good Witch makes it snow, which wakes them up. It's a very famous scene, but as beautiful and peaceful as this scene seemed, it was one of the most deadly. Because the snow was made from pure asbestos.
Guys, well, this is before they knew, right?
Yeah, a couple years prior, they had figured out that it was a direct link to, I believe, lung cancer, but it wasn't, like, widely known.
Yeah.
Or they didn't know how badly it was. But yeah, it was in chrysotile form, making the material a bit more dangerous than in, like, building material. And it's otherwise known as carcinogens, to anyone who doesn't know, which is cancer-causing substances. Substances surrounding the cast could, if inhaled, increase the risk of lung cancer and several other serious diseases. Asbestos is linked to an aggressive form of cancer known as mesothelioma. Despite that, it was widely marketed for commercial use in the 20th century before new uses were banned by the U.S. government in 1989. It wasn't uncommon for consumers in the early parts of that century to buy fake snow made of asbestos to decorate for the winter holidays. So this wasn't just like on set. People were buying this like fake snow made of pure asbestos. But yeah, watching that scene last night, I was like, oh my God, they are just sprinkling pure asbestos all over their faces and bodies.
Wow.
Yeah. It wasn't until the 70s and 80s that the substance was regulated and eventually banned for use. And like I said, even though it was known by 1939 that asbestos carried risks of cancer, it was still used to create the snow and other props and effects, in part because it was fireproof and looked close enough to snow that it could fool the audience. And The Wizard of Oz is hardly unique as a blockbuster film that allegedly exposed its stars to asbestos. It's a Wonderful Life in 1946, starring Jimmy Stewart, also had asbestos on the set as a stand-in for snow. So that was a threat for everyone, but especially Judy, the Scarecrow, the Tin Man, and the Lion, since they were all covered in it. And that wasn't even the most hazardous part for some of the actors. Aside from Judy, the other four main characters were essentially tortured on set. The Scarecrow, the Tin Man, the Cowardly Lion, and the Wicked Witch. All of their costumes were so intense and extremely hazardous, but they had to wear them basically all day, every day, while filming. Ray Bolger, who had played the Scarecrow, had always wanted to play the Scarecrow ever since he was a child. Bolger, much like his co-stars Burt Lauer and Jack Haley, was a former vaudevillian, which definitely showed in his performance. He had a real playfulness to him, and he was very noodly. He had a gangly stature and was also called Rubber Legs, which gave him a distinct brand of physical comedy, which suited the Scarecrow perfectly. But to his surprise and dismay, he was originally cast as the Tin Man, while Buddy Ebsen was cast as the Scarecrow. At the time production of the movie began, Ebsen was in the second year of his second two-year contract with MGM and was making $1,500 per week. He was a talented dancer who already had a noteworthy career on stage. By 1939, he had appeared in 8 films, including one where he danced with Judy Garland in the finale to Broadway Melody of 1938, and was originally intended to play the Scarecrow, as I just said. But just because that was the casting didn't mean Ray Bolger wasn't going to let it go. Even after the decision had been made, Bolger fought hard to be the Scarecrow, and in the end, he won. Ebsen didn't mind so much since he would be the Tin Man, so the two basically just swapped roles. It was a win-win. Unfortunately, fate was not very kind to Buddy Ebsen. MGM tested several types of costumes and makeup to make the Tin Man appear silvery. They tried covering Ebsen with tin, silvery paper, and silvery cloth-covered cardboard, and finally they decided to go with white face paint coated with aluminum dust. But there was a problem. It was toxic. Ebsen recorded all of his songs, finished 4 weeks of rehearsal, and completed costuming before the filming of the movie. And in October of 1938, only 10 days into filming on the 21st, Buddy suffered a severe toxic reaction from breathing the aluminum dust and went to the hospital after he had extreme difficulty breathing and severe cramping in his arms and legs. He was rushed to Good Samaritan Hospital and was put in an oxygen tent since his skin was blue. Doctors determined that the aluminum dust used in the Tin Man makeup was coating his lungs and keeping his blood from being oxygenated. At one point, his lungs failed due to exposure to the Tin Man paint. The studio became hysterical, calling the hospital constantly demanding updates and wanting an estimated time on when he would be back in the studio. They were not being sympathetic and they were worried about Buddy Ebsen's health. They were more so demanding he return to work.
Cool. I mean, it tracks with everything else they've done.
Right. Makeup artist Jack Don was even more hysterical, insisting that the issue couldn't be the dust because he had used pure aluminum dust. In the 30s, pure aluminum dust was thought to be totally safe, but unsurprisingly, it was not. It's the same as the asbestos and like, however long ago we talked about the radium girls. It's like, brush your teeth with radium. Maybe not.
Yeah, well, I guess that's how things get figured out, is just a ton of people die and then we regulate it eventually.
Yeah, well, Buddy Ebsen was not having a good time. He was in the hospital for 2 weeks before managing to recover enough, but by then the studio had recast Jack Haley as the Tin Man. So they didn't even wait for him.
Ugh.
Although nobody told Jack Haley what had happened to Buddy Ebsen. They just told him he dropped out.
And they're going to put the same shit on him?
So MGM did change the composition of his face makeup. The aluminum powder was then turned into a paste that was painted on to avoid the danger of inhaling it. But still, Haley had to miss 4 days of filming after the paint gave him a serious eye infection. Thankfully, he did not suffer any permanent damage, nor did he lose his job. But he was, you know, out of work for a couple of days because of a pretty severe eye infection that I'm pretty sure he needed surgery for. Like,
whoa, so you had surgery 2 days?
I don't think he had surgery at that time, but I did see one source that was like, yeah, he needed surgery.
Wow.
Yeah. Fun fact, Buddy Ebsen's recording of We're Off to See the Wizard with Dorothy the Scarecrow and the Cowardly Lion was actually used in the film's soundtrack, so his voice was in the movie, even though he wasn't the Tin Man anymore.
I hope he got royalties from that.
Yeah, for your trouble. Buddy Ebsen's story isn't entirely tragic. He did claim to have breathing problems for the rest of his life because of that quote-unquote damned movie, but he did return to the MGM studio on December 13th, not to work on the Oz Project, but on a movie called Four Girls in White. He went on to have an extremely successful career after playing George Russell in Davy Crockett, Jed Clampett in the Beverly Hillbillies, and was used by Walt Disney for his Dancing Man project, which later evolved into audio animatronics. And he actually outlived all of the credited cast members of the Oz film by many years, with only a couple Munchkin actors and extras outliving him. In 1994, his memoir was entitled The Other Side of Oz. So he did make it out, and he did outlive everyone, which is funny considering he almost died because of it.
Right. Yeah, he lived because he was taken out early.
Right. Yeah, maybe.
What? How old did he make it to?
95.
I mean, that...
It's a great run.
It's a great run, yeah. Yeah.
Looking for more than just pain relief? At Ability Chiropractic, we help your body do what it was designed to do, heal naturally. Our doctors focus on spinal and nervous system alignment to restore balance, energy, and overall wellness. From infants to grandparents, families across Columbus are discovering that true health starts from within, not from a prescription bottle. Experience what natural healing can do for you. Book your appointment today at AbilityChiro.com. That's AbilityChiro.com.
At the UPS store, we know being a small business owner means holiday time is still go time. Still get those orders shipped time and still re-up on stamps and supplies time. That's why this upcoming holiday, while others close up shop, we'll be open and happy to help you keep being unstoppable. Come into your local store today. Most locations are independently owned. Product, services, pricing, and hours of operation may vary. See center for details. The UPS store. Be unstoppable.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
So in some messed up way, even though he got taken out of the movie, and I'm sure that was devastating, he kind of made out on the deal.
It was a blessing in disguise for sure.
Yeah, it really was. The four other actors, Jack Haley included, still had the toxic makeup. All of them, the Scarecrow and the Cowardly Lion and the Wicked Witch, along with the Tin Man, couldn't eat at all while wearing their costumes because of their face paint and could only drink through straws because it was so toxic. And that's not even the half of it. Of all the things The Wizard of Oz gave popular culture, The Wicked Witch of the West is one of the greatest gifts, with the character having since become an icon of cinema as well as the theater stage. With her famous line, "I'll get you, my pretty, and your little dog, too," her green skin, beaky nose, blood-curdling cackle, and batch of flying monkeys, actress Margaret Hamilton earned her spot in cinematic history as The Wizard of Oz's Wicked Witch of the West. The reality of playing the character for Margaret Hamilton was far from luxurious. Unfortunately for Hamilton, makeup and prosthetics at the dawn of the 20th century were nowhere near as advanced as they are today. Not only was the Wicked Witch's skin color a first, but the paint that was used to turn the actress green was also made from powdered copper, which made it both highly flammable and so toxic that Hamilton could not risk eating or drinking except through a straw while she was in her makeup. During the infamous scene where she wags her gnarled finger at Dorothy and Toto, says, "I'll get you, my pretty, and your little dog, too," and was supposed to make her dramatic exit from Munchkinland in a cloud of red smoke and fire, something went very wrong. There was a trap door on set that didn't open fast enough, and the pyrotechnics crew launched the flames too soon. So Hamilton got caught in the flames. Seconds after the mishap, she looked down at her hands and saw the damage. From the wrist to the fingernails, there was no skin on her hand. It was as though someone had taken the top of her hand and peeled it like an orange, which was a quote. The green copper-based paint on her face and hands caught fire, giving her third-degree burns that halted production for 6 weeks.
How many people have to go to the hospital for them to figure something else out?
She's not going to be the only one.
Oh my God. You know, you feel like after two or three, you'd kind of look around and be like, okay, who else?
Mm-hmm.
Like, even if the only thing you care about is making money on this film, you would kind of look around and be like, okay, what else is going wrong?
Well, yeah. So all the time that they have to set back production and like halt production cost them a lot of money. So they almost did scrap the movie altogether because of how many times they had to stop production due to these issues on set. It was almost scrapped like a couple times, the entire project. But yeah, the Wicked Witch caught on fire.
Like all over her face?
Face and hands, yeah.
Did she still have a face?
Yeah, her face was okay enough, I guess. I don't really know the extent of how bad her face was. It seems like the majority of it was on her hands. But still, I mean, this green copper-based makeup was all over her. You saw it.
Like, yeah, I know.
The toxicity of her makeup actually prevented Hamilton from getting faster medical attention during the fiery stunt gone wrong. Quote, it would have been another matter if she had not been wearing green makeup. Makeup man Jack Young would have gently blotted off the grease paint, and Dr. Jones, the MGM doctor, would have covered the burns with salve. But the green makeup was toxic. So in that time, the two makeup colors that the studios had to be careful with were gold, because it was a concealer and closed up the pores, and green, because of the copper. Young was always extra careful when taking off Hamilton's makeup, quote, because you don't take chances with green. They ended up using alcohol to remove it, and it was such a painful process for Hamilton that, quote, I stood as long as I could, and then I said, I'm going to have to scream.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
They had to alcohol dab off the makeup from her burned hands.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
It's so crazy to me that they're like, we don't take chances with green. And it's like, you painted her from head to toe with the green that you don't take chances with? Are you crazy?
They really paint her head to toe in
green? No, mostly her head, neck, and hands, but still.
Yeah, was there no other option for the green?
I guess not. Know. The studio rightfully ruled that it would be unacceptable to use real paint on the horses during the Emerald City scene.
Wait, are you kidding me?
They tried several different alternatives, including food coloring, but the colors were not subtle enough. And ultimately, they sponged colorful jello powder onto the horses to get the right color and effect. They had to work fast between each take, though, because the horse invariably managed to lick off most of the jello between shots.
That's hilarious. So, but they treated the horses better than the actors.
Right. So no horses were hurt in the making of Wizard of Oz, only the actors. Yeah, so Margaret Hamilton had to recuperate at the hospital and at home before returning to set, and it was 6 weeks of that. This was back in the 1930s, so the only reason Hamilton returned to the production and didn't sue MGM's entire studio after the incident was because she knew it would ruin her acting career. She said, I know how this business works, and I would never work again. I will return to work on one condition, no more fireworks. So requiring some creative thinking on behalf of the costume department to hide her wounds when shooting resumed, she wore green gloves instead of green makeup because the nerves in her hands were still exposed from the burns, and she refused to do her other smoky scene where the broomstick she flies on is billowing smoke. MGM agreed to have another actress, Betty Danko, do flying for her. There's a skywriting sequence in the movie where the smoke is supposed to come out of the witch's broom, and I believe it spells out what? Surrender Dorothy?
Yeah.
And to make this happen, a pipe was attached to a bicycle seat saddle on the broomstick. However, during one of the test runs, the pipe exploded. According to Danko, it, quote, felt as though my scalp was coming off. The explosion blew me off my broomstick. Among other injuries, there was a 2-inch deep wound that nearly circled Danko's leg, which was full of bits of her costume. She also suffered severe burns and permanent scars from the incident. Danko made only $35 for completing the broomstick stunt and $790 for everything else she did in the movie. And what's so messed up is that the shot that caused all of that injury didn't even make it into the movie.
Well, isn't that kind of like, well, yeah, like she blew up mid-scene.
Sure.
Why would they put that in the movie?
I think they probably had more than one take of it, and that was the take that went wrong. But yeah, any of the takes didn't make it into the movie.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Oh,
I didn't mean the accident. Of course the accident's not going in the movie.
Okay. Misunderstood.
Okay. And speaking of malfunctions, there was yet another accident that harmed the actors during filming. This time, it was the witch's scary winged monkeys. In one scene, they appear to go flying through the sky, and what really held them up were wires, which broke during the scene. The monkeys crashed to the ground, suffering injuries, unsurprisingly. Also, not only was the makeup highly toxic and flammable, but her green complexion took months to fade for the witch.
Months. Wow.
Yeah. So everyone is having a really bad time. The monkeys fell. Betty Danko was blown up, as was Margaret Hamilton. And also on top of it all, she was green for months afterward.
Yeah. I mean, I can't even imagine finishing this film and then you have to look in the mirror every day and be reminded about it.
Yeah. Because she had third-degree burns. I mean, that leaves a mark. That doesn't just go away.
Yeah. So everyone is poisoned, abused, and broken.
Uh-huh. Correct.
Sure.
Yeah. And though her injuries were definitely the worst part of it for Margaret, that wasn't the only bad part of her time on set. She also was almost treated like the witch that she played. She was kept completely isolated, which was in part because most of her scenes were with just Dorothy or with the flying monkeys, but her dressing room was miserable. Margaret recalled, quote, "I always thought they got me mixed up with the actual witch. They must have thought that witches didn't have very nice dressing rooms because mine was simply awful. It was a square of canvas and the floor had some sort of dirty looking rug on it. And there was one chair and a card table with a light over it," which was in stark contrast to Billy Burke's dressing room, who played Glinda the Good Witch. She was the Broadway star wife of producer Florenz Ziegfeld, and you could tell. Her dressing room matched Glinda perfectly, with all pink and blue powder puffs and bottles. It was filled with fine fabrics and laces, a pink chaise lounge, pink satin walls, fur rugs, and she would come to and from set in limousines and had a very star energy to her. So, when Burke wasn't there, Margaret Hamilton would have lunch in Glinda's dressing room because hers was so sad. But even still, Margaret Hamilton was never jealous or bitter of anyone. She got what she could out of being the witch and never thought that it would eventually make her a star who would get flooded with daily fan mail from her fans. So Margaret Hamilton is a lovely woman and nothing like the Wicked Witch of the West, but she was kind of treated not so great.
Yeah, I was going to say she took a lot of shit.
Yeah, she did.
And seemed like she was okay with it.
Yeah, she just kind of ate lunch.
Rolled with the punches.
Yeah, in Glinda's dressing room when she wasn't there. Which was most of the time that she was on set, because they're really only in like one scene together, right?
Yeah, that's true. I mean, wouldn't she drink lunch? Because she can't eat.
Oh, well, right. Yeah, sure. Yeah. She would drink her lunch, I guess. Yeah, they were like living on milkshakes and stuff.
Wow.
And Margaret Hamilton worried while she was making the film that her character might traumatize little moviegoers. And that was a fair concern because it turned out her performance of the Wicked Witch would traumatize both children and adults for years to come. She was a single mom and a former kindergarten teacher and wasn't at all like the witch, so that really upset her. And to try to help with the terror, Margaret eventually appeared on a 1975 episode of Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood without her scary green makeup to reassure kids that her character was only make-believe and very relatable to little kids. She said she's just very unhappy because she never gets what she wants, like a pair of sparkly shoes that belong to her sister. So she went on Mr. Rogers. Isn't that funny?
Yeah. I'm trying to imagine what that episode would be like.
I think she was wearing like a pink dress and she had the black hat on or whatever to like be like, oh, I'm the witch, but I'm actually really nice.
I take it off.
Yeah.
I'm actually a kindergarten teacher. Yeah, it would be funny if she dressed up like the Good Witch.
Oh, yeah, right. I'm Glinda, the Good Witch. Margaret Hamilton was nothing like the Wicked Witch, like I've said, but Burt Lehr was the most similar to his character, the Cowardly Lion. He had this crazy energy that made him almost too much to bear as a person, but was the perfect fit for the lion, and he was known for his over-the-top comedic style and faces, which lent very well to the lion's persona. He also had huge anxiety issues. He struggled with minor health problems like gas, insomnia, nerves, and fear about everything, especially his performances. But the anxiety was nothing compared to what he physically had to endure to be the lion. Burt Lauer's costume was made from an actual lion hide that weighed in at around 90 pounds, allowing basically no ventilation. constantly sweating during filming, the issue got so bad that his costume had to be dried at the end of each day as it was so drenched with sweat. Like the other actors, he wasn't allowed to eat on set because of his makeup, and it was so difficult to apply, so he had to live off of milkshakes and soup for a long time before he requested for his makeup to be simply redone after lunch. I guess he was like, it's that easy? I could just ask you to redo it? And they were like, I guess.
Oh my god, how mad would you be?
I'd be so mad.
You're like, seriously, guys?
Yeah. Because they're not going to do more work
without
having been
asked.
And on a movie set, time is money. So
that's true.
You know. If you're curious, the Cowardly Lion costume sold for over $3 million at a New York auction a few years ago.
Dude, how did it smell?
Ooh, I don't want to
You can't
know.
Wash it, right?
I don't want to know. No, ooh. They could just dry it. They.
Oh, God. Dude.
So nasty.
I mean, how many times did you wear that?
I mean, every day.
Every day.
Months. Yeah. The same issue went for the Tin Man. And in addition to that, the Tin Man suit was made of actual metal. So Jack Haley couldn't even sit down on set, having to lean on a board when he was in need of a rest. Ray Bolger also suffered as the Scarecrow. The face mask that he wore for his Scarecrow costume was made of rubber and was so heavy and tight that it nearly suffocated him several times. He said, I had a rubber mask. It sort of closed the pores in my face, and when the lights got real hot and ate up all the oxygen, I couldn't breathe. He also suffered from deeply embedded marks in his skin thanks to his intricate costume and makeup. The costumes were so unbearable for all three men on set that Judy Garland remembered, quote, how each one of them was making bets as to which makeup was the most difficult all the way through the picture. I feel like the Tin Man wins. Well, maybe not Jack Haley's Tin Man. He got an eye infection and like that sucks. But like the original Tin Man wins. He almost died.
Yeah, the poisoned Tin Man, yeah, for sure.
But also Margaret Hamilton wins because she got blown up. I don't think anyone wins.
And no one wins.
I think everyone loses, actually. That's a good point.
It's just pick your poison, but it's still...
Your literal poison.
Still poison.
Pick your actual poison.
Yeah.
And put it on your face and wear it for months and then breathe in asbestos.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Looking for more than just pain relief? At Ability Chiropractic, we help your body do what it was designed to do. Heal naturally. Our doctors focus on spinal and nervous system alignment to restore balance, energy, and overall wellness. From infants to grandparents, families across Columbus are discovering that true health starts from within, not from a prescription bottle. Experience what natural healing can do for you. Book your appointment today at abilitychiro.com. That's abilitychiro.com.
At the UPS Store, we know being a small business owner means holiday time is still go time. Still get those orders shipped time, and still re-up on stamps and supplies time. That's why this upcoming holiday, while others close up shop, we'll be open and happy to help you keep being unstoppable. Come into your local store today. Most locations are independently owned. Product, services, pricing, and hours of operation may vary. See center for details. The UPS Store. Be unstoppable.
They were filming the movie in Technicolor, as we know, which was a new thing, and required a lot of lighting to properly expose the film. They actually used so much lighting, the production ended up using more electricity than any other movie in history. And I didn't fact check that, so let's just believe it. But, I mean, it's
probably
they used,
true.
They, I mean, at least at the time, they definitely used an obscene amount of electricity. They had so many lights. It was a very hot set. It even caused some brownouts in surrounding cities, which angered residents and city officials.
Yeah, I would be pissed too.
Yeah. AC was also very primitive back then, so the soundstage would get very hot, like over 100 degrees hot. And imagine you're in a 90-pound lion suit.
No, I would. It doesn't matter how much they're paying me. Like, I don't care.
You're a star, baby.
No, I'm not sweating into
a lion.
I'm going
to make you a star.
I don't care.
Well... It's a good thing you're not in the movie business.
Yeah.
But no, this is absolute torture. But let's talk about Toto.
Okay. You talk about Toto. I'll fill in later.
Okay. Toto is named Terry in real life. The dog was actually paid more for her role in the movie than the cast of Human Munchkins.
Combined?
No. Toto made about $125 per week working in the movie, and the Munchkins made $50 to $100 a week, depending on if they had lines or not. The shocking disparity shows just how prejudiced early Hollywood, and indeed society, was toward little people. It's also insane since Toto's paycheck wasn't even actually going to the dog. It was going right to the dog's owner, which, I mean, makes sense. And seeing that, I was like, that's absolutely insane and does not deserve to be the case. But also, Toto served in that movie. I'm sorry.
These are uncomfortable truths.
I'm not saying that Toto should have been paid more than human actors, obviously. That's not what I'm saying at all. What I am saying is that Toto deserved his paycheck or paycheck. She served that stage.
She did. But I do remember as the movie opens, you're kind of watching Dorothy like pick up Toto to bring her back home. And she is handling Toto like a football. Yeah, like it seems like the dog is so light and gets thrown around so quickly. Like, I don't know if it's a film thing, but if it happened the way that it looked, she was throwing that dog around.
It happened a lot throughout the whole movie. Toto was just clung onto, and like they continued to act their faces off, and Toto was still being clung to. So
yeah, I don't know. I mean, I don't know how filming was like, but it seems like Toto was rolling with the punches.
Yeah,
Toto was heavily sedated.
A very trained dog, like a very, very good girl. So $50 in 1939, when the movie was made, would have been like $1,134 today. But Toto was making $2,838 in today's money a week. Judy Garland was also paid significantly less than her co-stars. Despite being the star of the film, Garland wasn't paid anywhere near enough for her role, earning only around $500 per week, which was only $375 more than her canine co-star. She was grossly underpaid for her starring role in the film that has since gone on to become one of the most influential performances of all time. Ray Bolger, who played the Scarecrow, and Jack Haley, who played the Tin Man, earned far more than her at about $3,000 per week.
Wow.
Isn't that insane? And she was the star.
Yeah, and she was, I don't know, she was so abused on set. It's like, can you at least pay?
No.
I don't know.
She's just a woman.
Yeah.
She's just a little girl. So, yeah, it's messed up. It is absolutely terrible.
Yeah, but I mean, like, she wasn't going to negotiate. She's 16. Like, her mom, I don't know if she really even had a choice in this.
Probably like, not.
Right. So, yeah. I don't know.
It's just a shame.
It's a shame all around.
Yeah, it's terrible.
Yeah.
So, a wild rumor that we kind of touched on earlier that has been around forever is that the actors playing the Munchkins were partying nonstop. The Culver Hotel, which we know.
Wait, really?
Became the epicenter of the actors' drunken antics for 8 weeks they stayed there during filming, and the police were apparently regularly called. We're familiar with the Culver Hotel.
Yeah, no, it's a lovely hotel.
It is.
That is crazy.
We loved going by there. That was like the best area to like walk around.
Yeah, it is really nice. I just can't imagine that you're the hotel and you're like, yeah, you're going to book us for 2 months, like straight money, like for that long. I'm sure they paid them well. And then you realize what you got yourself into.
Well, so, I mean, it's rumors, and there's a couple different ways people look at it. So what the rumors say is they were absolutely crazy and having orgies, which sounds kind of made up to me personally. So I don't know if that's true or not. But the Munchkin actors from The Wizard of Oz have denied rumors that they were drunken and engaging in orgies. Margaret Pellegrini, a Munchkin actress, who said that while some of the actors liked to drink, nothing got out of hand. And Jerry Marin, who appeared in The Wizard of Oz as one of the Lollipop Guild, said, "Are you kidding? It was a lot of hard work, 6 days a week going into the studio at 6 a.m. and not getting home until around 7 or 8. There wasn't a lot of time for wild parties and that sort of crap." However, the manager of the Culver City Hotel, where the little people were put up, is known to have called the police at least once when his customers got too rowdy. And there was one day when a little person named Charles Kelly turned up on set packing 2 loaded pistols. Kelly was a jealous man and felt certain that Charlie Becker, the mayor of Munchkinland, was making eyes at his wife, Jessie. And he was right, because 2 years later, they got married.
Whoa.
So it seems like it's most of them were just normal people doing their job and being actors. And then there were a couple people who were like extra rowdy and like drinking. But it's definitely been blown out of proportion. 100%.
Yeah, I was going to say that's what it sounds like.
Yeah.
They only called the cops once.
Apparently, yeah.
Yeah, they're making it sound like this was a nightly occurrence.
Yeah, it made it seem like they were just absolutely shit-faced all the time and like the police were on speed dial. Like that. I don't think that was the case. But yeah, that's like one of the major rumors of The Wizard of Oz and like the production of it. Many of these rumors were spread by Judy Garland on talk shows and on other things. And it wasn't unheard of for her to be making things up to tell a good story. Like people in her life were like, yeah, she lied a little bit.
She likes to lie.
Right. So that's weird. But there were also a couple of other weird things that went wrong on set. The scene where Dorothy meets the Scarecrow featured a trained raven named Jimmy. And that wasn't his name in the movie. He was just a raven named Jimmy.
Right. How much did the raven get paid?
Oh, I have no idea. But it's pretty cool because he had the intelligence of an 8-year-old kid.
Really? That's incredible.
I know. In the scene, the raven was pecking at the Scarecrow's straw and then flies away. However, while filming the scene, Jimmy somehow broke the hidden thread he was attached to and flew 60 or so feet to the top of the soundstage. What sucked about that was that Jimmy, the raven, was the only trained raven in Hollywood, which meant you couldn't just get another one. So an assistant technician had to climb up 5 stories to the top of the building in an effort to capture Jimmy. But 5 or 6 hours later, Jimmy still refused to come down. He was apparently a very stubborn bird. So everyone had to go home, and filming once again was delayed. Jimmy was finally captured around 2 a.m.
Oh my God. How hilarious is that? That a bird, a stubborn bird named Jimmy, halted production. How much money did that cost them? Probably like thousands of dollars. Yes. Back then. So yeah. Tens or hundreds of thousands of dollars today.
Yeah, probably.
It's just really funny.
Mm-hmm. Later that week, after they were successfully able to film the Scarecrow scene, they spent 3 days filming the intro to The Tin Man. But they had been filming out of order, and the most recent scene they had filmed with him was at the witch's castle. And if we think about the order of the movie, the witch's castle is post Emerald City. So the Tin Man is already all shiny because he got cleaned and polished up in the Emerald City. But in the beginning of the movie, he's supposed to be all rusty. So to make a long story short, they had to scrap a lot of the movie because they filmed multiple scenes with the Tin Man in the wrong costume. They had to make him rusty. So that set back filming as well and was a $60,000 mistake at the time, which would have been around a $1.3 million mistake today.
Oops.
Yeah, oops is right. By March 16th, despite being months past schedule and over $1 million over budget, the filming of The Wizard of Oz officially ended. When the movie first came out, they had to go back and forth with edits to make it shorter. And despite being popular at the box office, it would take over a year for the film to make profit since they went so far over budget. It was also made worse by the marketing for the movie. It was so elaborate and insane that tacked on another $1 million to production.
This is insane, but it was eventually worth it.
Yeah, eventually, I guess. Of The Wizard of Oz, Ray Bolger, who played the Scarecrow, said, "I knew that I was taking part in a strange kind of adventure. Everything had to be invented for the picture. The effects, the sound, the technicolor. It was all new. But when the reviews came out, it was a terrific disappointment. The picture got terrible notices. It was only when The Wizard of Oz came into the home with television that it redeemed itself. Then it was no longer a picture. It was an institution." So the film, like we mentioned earlier, found a new life in 1956 after television broadcast on CBS. This reintroduced the film to the public and showcased just how magical the film is. After the film, the actors went on to keep working. Thankfully, none of their injuries were so serious that Oz was their final movie. And as the movie was filmed 85 years ago, sadly, no one from the main cast is still alive today. The last living Munchkin, played by Jerry Marin, died at age 99 in 2018. Despite the horrors on set, the film continues to be popular with audiences and is one of the most influential movies of all time. The Wizard of Oz was not the first film in color, but its use of Technicolor set it apart from earlier attempts. The film's success paved the way for the widespread adoption of color in filmmaking, ultimately influencing cinema's visual language. And because it was in color, that was the reason they had to be so creative with the costuming, which is very cool but also sucked at the time. The legacy of the film continues on through multiple different mediums. There are a million references and nods to the film all throughout media and in pop culture. There have been comic book adaptations, multiple television shows, and even an album from Elton John based on the film. However, the most notable impact that the film had on pop culture is easily with Dunkin' Donuts. In 1972, the company wanted to target children specifically and created a special product called Munchkins, named after the Wizard of Oz characters. Almost 50 years later, the name remains, and Munchkins are still incredibly popular with adults and children. But the most popular, of course, is Wicked musical. And that's kind of where we're at today. Like, there's so much out there that is Wizard of Oz inspired, but we got Wicked coming out real soon, and I'm excited about that. But isn't the Dunkin' Donuts thing kind of cool?
Yeah, I didn't know that.
I didn't realize they were, like, specifically from The Wizard of Oz as, like, a marketing tactic. Like, I had made the connection that I was like, oh, Munchkins. I wonder if that had anything to do. I don't know. But it is.
Yeah, I mean, that's smart. So now every time I go, I'm going to think about Wizard of Oz now.
Yeah.
Yeah, there were so many lines throughout the movie that I didn't know where they came from. But they must have come from Oz because it was made so long ago. Like, the line where he's like, paid no attention to the man behind the curtain.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't know that's where it was from.
Oh, funny.
So.
Was there another one that you remember?
I can't remember it right now, but I think there was like two or three.
Okay. Looking back on it now, do you kind of look at that differently? Like the movie we watched last night versus all the information you know now?
Oh, it's ruined. I can't.
It's completely.
I've been looking at Dorothy. I'm like, oh my God.
It's
like,
so
this,
dark.
This poor girl is in the darkest of dark places right now.
They all were. But well, yeah, Dorothy, I mean, Judy Garland went through it, but they all did.
Yeah, I know. They all, well, I don't know. She was a child.
Yeah,
you know,
she was
16.
It
just makes it a different thing. So yeah, well, yeah, movie ruined. But I guess,
sorry.
You know, it's so horrible, like how it was produced. At the same time, it is one of the most recognizable movies of all time.
Yes, and it influenced like a lot of things. Probably so many things that we wouldn't even begin to know how many things. Like that sentence even makes sense. You know what I mean? Like it had influences in every single part of media, as far as like movie making and pop culture references and costuming and lighting. Like every aspect of that film was like really well done and like influenced everything else following it. Not everything, but, you know, a lot.
Right. And I guess, like, they didn't fully know, at least for most of the things that they used. And
right.
These poor actors had to go through it. But
yeah.
Their experience, I'm sure, did, you know, help people who came after them.
You would really hope.
Eventually, I'm sure it did. But I don't know about an immediate effect.
Yeah, eventually. I mean, in that moment, they were like, oh, we can't use aluminum powder. We'll just make it aluminum paste. Like, we're still painting that on you. It's just, you know,
don't breathe it.
A little different.
Don't breathe.
Yeah. So it's, yeah, it seems like the people in charge, like the actual movie makers, were really just trying
psychopaths.
Trying to get like, that money.
That's the only thing.
Yeah. I mean, that's Hollywood, isn't it?
Yeah. But, you know, it is disappointing to,
it is.
You know, confront it each time.
It is definitely disappointing.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was like, do you want a physical injury or do you want psychological injury? Like, which one?
Probably physical. Yeah, both.
Yeah, and Judy's was physical because it was a drug addiction. Anyway, we don't have to get into it. It was just dark all around. But yeah, the pure asbestos snow really got me. Like, watching that scene last night, I was like, bro, they are
just... you were having a completely different experience than me.
I know.
Like, oh, you know, like, this is happening. It's a kids movie.
You have no idea how many times I had to bite my tongue to not say something to you last night because I wanted to
have... Yeah, you would
have
ruined the whole film.
I know.
You're like, oh, yeah, it's asbestos. I'm like, okay.
Oh, you know that scene where she goes in the smoke cloud? She actually got burnt up, third degree burns for that. So,
yeah.
Like, the most iconic line in the film, I'll get you, my pretty, and your little dog, too.
Well, she is immortalized.
Yeah, no, she's an icon, a legend.
Yeah.
They all are.
It's kind of like when you watch the Milo and Otis movie.
Oh, please. Milo and Otis, that movie from my childhood was like something I have seen that movie probably 800 times. Like, I'm not even joking. It was a movie that we put on all the time growing up. Like, I could have just spoken all the lines at you at one point in my life. But now learning the truth behind Milo and Otis, I could never watch it again.
Right. It's just ruined. Awful. I was like, I think this is what it's going to do for Wizard of Oz, what that did for me. You're like looking at the cat and you're like, you're number 23.
Oh God, don't say that. Yeah, that one. I mean, if you don't know anything about Milo and Otis, honestly, proceed with caution because that shit is dark too. But in Wizard of Oz, they painted the horse with Jell-O. So the horses were fine.
Yeah, no, because I was watching and I'm like, okay, we went from purple to red to yellow.
Yep.
I'm like, what did they do to the horse? Honestly, the horse was having a great time.
The horse was having the time of its Jell-O. Life. It got to lick Jell-O powder off itself all day.
Yeah.
Tasty. Anyway.
But yeah, it is just, it's a piece of culture.
It is.
You know?
Yeah. So I wanted to talk about it because it's been on the forefront of my mind recently, and I thought it would be an interesting one to talk about, and here we are. I hope you enjoyed it. I enjoyed looking into it, even though it was messed up, but I think that's all I really have to say about that. So why don't we have a bit of a palate cleanser, and you can tell me your good thing.
My good thing is that this weekend we are traveling a little bit across the state, the great state of Michigan, to go visit our friend.
Yeah.
And I'm looking forward to it.
It's
going to be a good time. You know, we haven't seen her in person in a little bit, so.
Yeah, she listens. Shout out, Kaylee. Hey.
Shout her out. yeah, I'm excited. What's your good thing?
Me too. That is definitely a good thing. My other good thing is that I made my mama's stuffing, my grandmother's stuffing, and it came out real good.
And shout out to mama.
Shout out, mama. We were on the phone a couple nights ago for like an hour and a half while she walked me through every step of making her stuffing. And it was great. It was a very fun time to hang out with mama. And also at the end of it, I got my favorite thing ever. So that was
it's good stuffing.
Really good. But anyway, thank you so much for listening. If you would like to check out a bunch of bonus episodes, one just came out this past week, head over to patreon.com/nottodaypodcast. If you or anyone you know has a story of survival that you'd like to share with us and possibly hear on upcoming listeners episodes, send it to notodaypodcast@gmail.com. We post pictures over on our Instagram, and you can find the link to our merch shop over in the Instagram bio at nottoday_podcast. We have a TikTok that is Not Today Podcast and a Twitter that's Not Today Podcast, but the TN Podcast is a 3.
Because that makes sense.
And just keep breathing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
At Ability Chiropractic, they do things differently. They believe lasting health starts with understanding how your body truly works, not masking pain with quick fixes. Their doctors take time to educate and empower you to take control of your wellness journey. Through gentle, customized adjustments, they help you restore proper function and unlock your body's natural healing power. That's why Columbus families have trusted Ability Chiropractic since 2012. See the difference for yourself. Book your appointment today at abilitychiro.com.
Here for the Lowe's early Black Friday deals? You're right on time for some of our biggest savings. We're talking up to 50% off select major appliances, plus up to an extra 25% off when you bundle select major appliances. Holiday lights going up soon? Select ladders are up to 50% off right now. Get Black Friday prices without the Black Friday crowds. Lowe's, we help you save. Valid through 11/19. Selection varies by location. Select locations only. While supplies last. See Lowe's.com for more details.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.